So the first question I'd like to ask you is, how did you, what made you want to get involved in the housing issue?
Me personally, or the
Yes.
Carnegie Community Action
You
Project?
personally, and then
Well, it's just
what was
so
that?
insane that we live in such a rich country and there's people suffering because they're homeless. It's disgusting, and I guess that's it. Just the contradiction between, and the fact that it's totally unnecessary. Homelessness is totally unnecessary.
And so, how did the Carnegie organization kind of get started?
Well, we've been going since the 90s with a little bit of a hiatus in the middle. And I've been here since, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And so CAP, Carnegie Community Action Project, is a project of the board of the Carnegie Community Center Association. So we're the board is elected by about 5,000 members of Carnegie, who are mostly residents here, and homelessness is a big issue for them. So CAP works on homelessness, getting more housing built, improving the quality of housing, improving incomes, and trying to stop gentrification. That's kind of the goals for this organization that the board wants us to work on.
So what we do, what we're doing is we're looking for kind of narratives in and around homelessness and trying to kind of draw them out and share them. So I was wondering if maybe you had a particular
Is
memory.
this a media class that you're in?
Yes, it is.
Well, let me give you a little lecture then, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Media people are always trying, they're always told to put a human face on the problem. And then they go around and they put the human face on it, but they don't put the, often, most often, they don't put the analysis on it. They don't put the blame on it. And so what you end up with is that the people who see or hear the media think of charity as the solution rather than changing the policies that have caused homelessness in the first place. So I can remember, for example, being 67 years old when we had virtually no homelessness in Canada because welfare rates were adequate when the government was building social housing. And when welfare stopped being adequate, when minimum wage stopped being adequate, when the government's really cut back on social housing, then we have homelessness. It's really simple. And so putting a human face on homelessness doesn't do anything. I actually have written a book called Poor Bashing: The Politics of Exclusion, and there's a chapter in there on this very topic. So I don't know. It's you know, there are a lot of stories of people who are homeless and become unhomeless. Actually, we're getting a practicum student in a few weeks who was homeless a couple of years ago, and Wendy, our organizer, found that him and some other people who were camped in the same place at the welfare office, they found him housing, and now he's going to Native Ed and he's going to be our practicum student. He had housing, right? So.
Let me ask you this then,
Excuse
because
me a second.
sure. Because I was talking with Elizabeth Keller, Sister Elizabeth Keller from the Downtown Eastside Residency Association, and she brought up the issues of developers and their influence in politics. And I was wondering if maybe you wanted to comment on maybe your experiences with this, or how they influence both City Hall as well as provincial and federal government.
Well, the city has the power of zoning, which is a power that allows them to confer by signing a document. It allows them to make property way more valuable than it is by saying instead of only being able to build 10 stories here, you can build 20 stories. That basically doubles the value of a piece of property. And so developers focus their energy on the municipal level of government rather than federal or provincial because the city has that power. And so they give a lot of money to city politicians, and then they work with them through various, the Urban Development Institute, which is the association of all the developers, and they try to get denser zoning so that their property values go up. So that's pretty clear. And then when you don't own property, like most people in this neighborhood, you can get pushed around by those who do own. And one of the things that the Olympics was a lot about real estate and development. Bob Rennie, who's the condo king in Vancouver, right? He bought 16 full-page ads supporting the Olympics because he wants to use the Olympics to market real estate to rich foreigners. And of course, the more people who come here to buy, the more prices go up. So that contributes to gentrification, which contributes to higher land prices, which contributes to poor people being pushed out of hotels by high rents, which contributes to homelessness. And there's this whole ripple effect that happens, which we try to show in this, which isn't very good for radio, but if you wanted to look at it, you could use it to explain the ripple effects of gentrification.
That actually brings it me to...
Sorry, you guys, sorry to interrupt. I just want to take this stuff.
And I wanted to ask about, because you talk a lot about gentrification, certainly on your website, and also in your Poor Bashing book.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering...
No, I don't talk about it in the
Poor Bashing book. No. So anyways...
sorry, guys.
It's fine. So I was wondering if you wanted to maybe talk about how... Why do you kind of focus on this a lot? Why is this so important to homelessness? Because I don't think a lot of people don't make that connection. Right off the bat,
okay,
of how building condos and how building kind of these kind of things could contribute to homelessness.
Okay, so we've done a lot, 2 years of consultation with low-income residents at the Downtown East Side. We did community visioning, community mapping, and we had a questionnaire. In the mapping, we asked people what was the most meaningful place in the Downtown East Side to them. And out of that mapping process, we developed a list of about 10 community assets. So there's a lot of really good things about the Downtown East Side that people that don't live here don't understand. Like people who live here, a lot of them have empathy for people who are suffering. This is a non-judgmental area. There's 5,000 units of social housing, which provide quite a stable base for people in the area, and which people would love to get into who aren't in them. People like the parks, and there's a strong feeling of social justice and fighting for social justice. There's a strong history of that. Everything in this community, including this building, have been fought for long periods of time in order for people here to get like a community center or a waterfront park. Whatever. So there's a lot of volunteering that happens in this neighborhood, way more than in any other neighborhood, I would say. And there's a lot of caring, and everything is close, which is really important if you're poor because you don't have money for bus fare or car. So there's all these good things about the neighborhood that nobody knows about. So then along comes Woodwards, which is this huge condo development. It does have some social housing in it, but the overall impact of it has been to really increase property values around it, because all the stores are upgrading. If you just go down by Woodwards, you can see they're all being renovated, they're all opening up, they're selling high-end furniture, there's a place where you can take power naps, there's a place that sells dog clothes. They're not places that low-income people would go to. So there's this, and this happens in all cities where gentrification happens, there's the ripple effects, where you get a big development like Woodwards that has over 500 condos, which is not an inclusive development, even though they say it is. It has a amenity room at the top with a W-shaped hot tub. And they say that they have the sexiest washrooms in North America or something. But the poor people who live here can't use that amenity room, right? The entrance and the amenities are segregated based on class, even though they're saying that it's inclusive. So Woodward's is there, the land values increase, there's more real estate speculation, the hotel rents increase, people can't afford to live in the hotels. A person on welfare gets $375 a month. The hotels are up over $500, especially the ones close to Woodward's. So a person on welfare gets $610 a month. They get $375 for rent. I forget what I just said. So anyway, you can't afford $500 a month if you're on welfare. So they have to move out. Where do they go? Where else can they find a place for $375? Maybe one of the tent cities, maybe one of the shelters, right? Then hotels close for renovation or sale, like the Argyle, the Golden Crown, the Burns Block. And so there's more evictions by, we call them renovictions, because they renovate and then they raise the rent. People become homelessness. The stores serving low-income residents are forced out because property taxes go up, and the stores serving the rich residents come in. The yuppie stores move in. There's more security guards and police harassment, so that the low-income people, this always happens at Tinseltown and in Gastown, the business owners hire security guards and they trail low-income people and kick them out of their stores and stuff. And the city gives subsidies to the chain stores at Woodward's, but not to the local stores that serve low-income people.
We'll call you when we finish.
But the community assets.
Okay, bye.
It isn't really the last thing. There's other things happen too. Like now there's a... People in the community have a lot of services that they need and appreciate. That's one of the assets. But when the richer people move in, they often form, you know, like strata associations or whatever. And already they're trying to say, oh, we don't want any more social housing, which is desperately needed in this neighborhood because the homelessness is increasing because the condos are here, right? Or they say, we don't want any more services. And they use all this language of, we want a balanced community and all this stuff, which means they want to push the poor people out. So does that describe the process for you?
Yes, very well.
Okay.
thank you.
They don't all do that. Not all the richer people that move in do that, but a lot of them do.
So I know you have to go pretty soon, so I'll just ask you one last, normally I just kind of give an opportunity. Is there anything, if there was like kind of one message that you want to kind of bring across, could you maybe, you know?
We need a national housing program that would build about 30,000 units of housing a year across the country. It would actually save governments money because ending homelessness is cheaper than keeping people on the streets. There have been two government studies that say that. And so, yeah, if somebody wants to do something about homelessness, charity will never end homelessness, although it's needed right now, but it won't end it. And we need a national housing program. We also need the provincial government to spend its $250 million housing endowment fund on housing. It seems somewhat ironic that they refuse to do that. Yeah, so those are the two main things.